America honors its fallen, and at the Chick-fil-A in Fargo, the lunch rush had to wait. The long weekend is a busy one in the Iran war negotiations, but are we any closer this morning to an end to the conflict? And a group of Fargo residents is petitioning a grocery store's ownership group not to close down the neighborhood market. Good morning, my friend. A busy and interesting day lies ahead for us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Tuesday that feels a heck of a lot like a Monday. Here in, all of a sudden, tropical Fargo, North Dakota. How about these last couple of days? Unbelievable. We went from winter to late winter to really late winter to cold early spring to summer. And it happened in about span of 2 days. Felt great. Great yesterday. Sunday was as perfect a day as you could hope for. Because the humidity isn't all that high. Even yesterday felt pretty good at 93. I was filling in yesterday morning for Bonnie Amistadi over at WDAY, and I had to kind of pick the 3-degree guarantee for the day. And Leah was doing the forecasting. Leah Jones, she's wonderful. When Dean's not here, she does a great job filling in. And Leah said, "We're looking at low 90s." on her report. And so Dean said, "Steve, just figure out what the 3-degree guarantee should be." So I said, 92. And I was off by 1 degree, but not all bad, Addison. I said 92, it was 93. So I don't know if I've got a future in meteorology, and I had definitely had a cheat code in front of me, but I felt pretty good about, I did not make Dean miss the 3-degree guarantee today.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a little help here and there. So
exactly right. Which is why I'm glad I have you, my friend, to do what we do here each day. And I'm glad that I have you, my friend, listening on the radio, the smart speaker, the mobile app, on the computer. However you're catching me today, thank you for hanging with me. Going to catch you up on what was a very busy weekend. There weren't any shocking stories. There weren't any big tragedies, any massive celebrations other than Memorial Day, which is not really a celebration so much as it is a commemoration, but interesting to see how people around our community honored the holiday, including our friend Sung Kim, the new owner at Chick-fil-A. What an amazing statement he made yesterday. So lots to get to here on the program today. We have a travel destination to give you for your consideration from our friends at Travel Travel, so we'll do that today. We're going to visit with Glenn Urlacher and Lynn Helmrast. They're part of the group that has titled themselves Say No to the Casino at Moorhead. And as you know, the White Earth Tribe is planning to build a big casino and convention center in Moorhead. A group of local local residents is trying to offer some resistance to that and say this is not the right idea for our community. We're going to hear them out today for a half hour between 9:30 and 10 o'clock. Coming up at 10:30 today, Julie Ellingson, who's the Executive Vice President of the North Dakota Stockmen's Association, will be with us. And we're going to find out why the cattle herd nationwide is declining, but in North Dakota, we're going the other direction. So that coming your way, and maybe a couple Bison football notes before the end of the show as well. So let's get to it here with the Morning Wire, semi-automatic storylines with a rapid-fire run down to the world around us here on this Tuesday, May 26, 2026. It's almost June. How about that? Although the way the weather's been going feels like it could be July or August. We might be having the hottest stretch of the summer right now, and it's not even going to be June until basically almost a week from now. Our average high is 73 in Fargo for this day, but our record high is 93, and that one is, I don't know if in jeopardy is the right word, but we could be right there. Dean's forecasting 93 today, so there's a possibility we'll get there. Record low 29 in 1970. We will gain 1 minute 54 seconds of daylight today. Yeah, we're at that time of the year where we're under 2 minutes of accrued daylight every day, but we'll take it. Markets today have been very busy after the president came out over the weekend and basically said, we have a framework for a deal in place. Marco Rubio said, I think we might have something even signed this weekend. That didn't happen, but it's got traders feeling like, okay, maybe this thing is over. And when this thing does get over, you're going to see stocks fly up. You're going to see cryptocurrencies fly up. You're going to see oil prices fly downward. We're starting to see some creeping in those directions here this morning. Dow is up 94, S&P 500 up 57, NASDAQ up 311. All of them would be records if the market were to end at these levels at the end of trading today. WTI crude oil, 94.14, which is as low as that's been in a while. Probably 103, 104 when I ended the show on Friday. So that has changed a little bit. Gold today, basically unchanged. Silver, same thing. Gold about $4,500 an ounce. Silver, $76 an ounce. And Bitcoin today has been in the upper 70s to low 80s for the last couple months or so, and that's where it sits today at 77,200. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas today, $4.49. That's down 3 cents from Friday. And I see the grocery stores in town are down a little bit too. $3.83, the price at the corner store this morning here, which is better than it's been for a little while. North Dakota average price, $4.14. Minnesota, $4.29. South Dakota, $4.27. Diesel fuel today at $5.58. What's going on in the news today? Well, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said early today that a deal with Iran is still possible despite new American strikes over the weekend that cast doubt on the fragile ceasefire. Rubio says there are some talks going on in Qatar today. This is the story of the day. Much more on this in just a minute. Meanwhile, Iranian authorities earlier today executed a man after convicting him of alleged cooperation with Israel. The Iranian court system added his sentence was upheld by Iran's Supreme Court. It's the latest in a string of executions by the Islamic Republic for security-related cases dealing with the war with the United States and Israel. Meanwhile, hundreds from around the region turned out of Fargo's National Cemetery on Memorial Day. For 7 years, the ceremony has brought the community together. Volunteer committee members said this year carries even more weight, with this being the 250th birthday of America. More than 1,000 veterans are buried at Fargo's National Cemetery. I believe I saw that Lieutenant Governor Michelle Strinden took part in the ceremony there yesterday. The waffle fries had to wait yesterday at Fargo's Chick-fil-A near West Acres Mall. Valley News Live reports that a busy lunch hour came to a brief standstill on Monday as workers and customers paused to honor fallen service members on Memorial Day. The restaurant shut down operations for 10 minutes at 11:50 a.m. and held a moment of silence, sang the national anthem, and raised an American flag. The store owner is First Lieutenant Sung Kim of the U.S. Army, who said our freedom's a privilege, and as a business owner and Army officer, he wanted to honor those people who died serving our country. After the ceremony, veterans and active duty service members were offered their choice of a free sandwich or an 8-count order of nuggets. How great is that? Good job, Sung. Way to go. A candidate for Fargo School Board says, despite rumors on social media, she hasn't received any death threats after comments made following our recent candidate forum. Carissa Geske tells our newsroom that she's been being called an Islamophobe and her business is taking a hit after comments made by the forum on the flag and WDAY radio. Geske said during the forum that Fargo voters need to consider how Islam and Christianity could function in the same society because they are inherently not compatible. Social media traffic locally has suggested that Geske had been getting death threats. Valley News Live reports a community petition is calling on Hornbacher's management to reverse its decision to close the express location on University Drive. The petition has collected more than 400 signatures as of yesterday. The petition states that many households in the neighborhood have come to rely on the location for groceries and employment. Coburn's announced May 19th that it was going to close the location because the lease was coming to an end. The store has operated for more than 70 years. Ground has been broken for Fargo's new elementary school. On Friday, Fargo Public Schools held a groundbreaking ceremony for the new Horace Mann Elementary School in North Fargo. It's scheduled to open in the fall of 2028. Earlier this year, the Board of Education approved moving forward with the project, which would bring together the Horace Mann, Roosevelt, and Madison attendance areas under a single building. The City of Fargo is reminding residents that Marathon Weekend is just a few days away. Fargo PD is warning drivers about impacts to roads within the city. Thousands are expected Friday night for the youth run, and Saturday, road closures will begin as early as 3 a.m. for the Saturday races. The Department of Justice says it's removing from its website news releases about criminal cases related to the January 6th, 2021 disturbance in D.C. It calls the information about the prosecution's, quote, partisan propaganda. The move is the latest step by the Trump administration to change the reporting coming from internal sources on the assault on the Capitol. When we come back on the Steve Holcim Show, the story of the day, no question about it, the weekend in Iran, been a very interesting one there and abroad. That's next. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. 15 minutes or less, that's all it takes to sign the paperwork and drive off the lot with a brand new or spiffy pre-owned car, truck, or SUV. If you want to call us today, please do so. 701-271-1100 is our phone number. That's our text line as well. 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment and get in this week at valleychristian.co. 20 past the hour. Good morning, my friend. Great to be here with you as we get back to a normal week after having a day away from the normal buzz of business activity here. Hopefully you had a good long weekend as well. Hopefully it was a meaningful weekend as we all honored those who have paid that price for our country. So glad to be back here with you on a beautiful sun-splashed morning as we get back to the business of doing business here on this Tuesday. We are pleased to be joined right now by our good friends from the Travel Group. And we're thankful every time that we get the chance to talk to Katie because she always gives us some great ideas on travel. Good morning, Katie. How are you?
Good. I'm good. It's good to be back, but it was a great weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure was. Yeah, summer arrived in a hurry, didn't it? It was absolutely wonderful. Yeah, so you're actually thinking ahead to November a little bit with your latest travel idea. Tell us what you got planned, Katie.
Yes, we have a great deal. So we are going to do another Viking River cruise, but this time we're going to do it on the Rhine. So we are going to do November 7th through the 14th. We're going to do airfare from Fargo, your transfers to and from the ship, and we're going to do a seven-day Rhine getaway cruise that goes from Basel, Switzerland, up to Amsterdam. We're going to have all your meals on the boat included and one shore excursion per port also included. And the best thing is, it's only $26.74 per person.
No kidding. Wow. And you're flying out of where on that one, Katie?
We're flying out of Fargo.
Okay. So you don't even have to drive down to the cities for $2,600 a person. And I can't think of a more picturesque place to be when you're talking about those Rhine River cruises. You got all those wonderful places over there. You get a little dash of Holland along the way also. And they make it easy for you on those cruise ships, for sure. Have you been to that part of the world before yourself, Katie?
I have been there in this area a couple times. I have not done the Rhine. Actually, I'm doing it in August, so I'll have more details on that. But I've done a couple of river cruises, and I have been to a lot of these locations. But it's such a great area. So much food, culture, beer, you name it. Definitely, you're getting in the heart of Germany, so you definitely get a lot of the good German food for sure.
Oh, boy, that sounds so good. And Viking Cruises, they've been doing it for a long time. They're the pros, and nobody better when it comes to making sure that every detail is taken care of and included. So this will be a fun one. Katie, how do people get a hold of you if they want to find out some more information or get signed up?
Sure, definitely give us a call at 701-492-5000. Or you can email info@ttravel.com, and they will send you some more details.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing the details with us. This one's a winner. I think this one will fill up quick, Katie.
It will, for sure, so don't wait.
They always do, right? Yeah. All right. Thanks much, my friend. You have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
Take care. All right, story of the day. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said early today that a deal with Iran is still possible despite some new strikes over the weekend. Apparently, Iran was laying down some mines in the Strait of Hormuz, and the United States decided to fire back when they were acted upon. And so Secretary of State said earlier today, I think we can still get something done today. So this is weird. We're in a ceasefire, but there's fire going back and forth between the two sides. And yet Rubio is saying there's talks going on in Qatar today. So I think we may be able to get something done even today. So we'll see what happens. Rubio said something that every member of the administration has been saying all along, and that is that President Trump is committed to either making a good deal or no deal. There will not be a bad deal made. And Rubio also mentioned today that Reuters reporting that the Strait of Hormuz will reopen one way or another. He said, quote, the straits have to be open. They're going to be open one way or the other, so they need to be open, he said to reporters in Jaipur, India today. He said what's happening there is unlawful and it's illegal. So this comes as Iran's foreign ministry accused the U.S. today of a grave violation of the ceasefire for launching those attacks on southern Iran last night, including strikes on boats in the strait. And they say that four members of their naval forces were taken out. The U.S. Military Central Command said this was only self-defense to protect forces in the region targeting missile launch sites and boats trying to lay sea mines. Iranian state media has identified and giving out the names of the four people it says were killed in those overnight strikes. President has been on social media, you won't be surprised to learn, over this weekend, talking about this. He is not giving up, at least publicly in his comments, on getting all the uranium out of Iran, at least the enriched uranium, saying on a Truth Social post, quote, the enriched uranium will either be immediately turned over to the U.S. to be brought home and destroyed, or preferably destroyed in place or at another acceptable location, with the Atomic Energy Commission being witness to this process and event. Another senior Trump administration official told Bloomberg over the weekend that Iran has agreed in principle to dispose of the highly enriched uranium in these negotiations, but that officials were still working through details of the mechanism for that disposal. So what do we make of this? You know this is how I operate. I try to give you all the headlines, and then I'll give you my perspective on it. Then you tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm right. And we have a little fun with that process, and that's good. We can always spar a little bit on this. Here's what is worrisome to me. It was the last piece of that whole story, talking about the enriched or the processed uranium. When I see the president say, specifically, the enriched uranium will either be immediately turned over to the U.S. to be brought home and destroyed, or preferably destroyed in place or somewhere else, he's not saying all the uranium. He's saying the enriched uranium, and they call it the dust. That's what these people call it, the ones that know about this. If we are going to do this job the way it needs to be done, it cannot just be the processed uranium. We need their entire stockpile of the raw material, and we need to destroy all the technology used to go through the enrichment process. If we don't do that, all we've done is push this timeline back, what, a couple of months? I mean, we saw how quickly they were able to resuscitate their operation after Midnight Hammer last year. It didn't take very long. If we take the enriched uranium, that's the final product coming off the assembly line, and for sure we don't want them to have that. But I continue to be of the mindset, as ugly as this might be, there really is no other choice for us right now but to go into Iran, and whether that means we have military troops on the ground going through there, we need to get the bad guys, we need to get the uranium, the refined and the unprocessed, and we need to destroy their technology so that they at least have to start all of that over again. If not, all we've done is push them back a couple of months. That's how I see it. We'll see what happens. I do not envy this president. He is in a very difficult position, but we have to finish this job fully. And I'm not the only one saying this, but I think people like me are definitely in the minority at this point. Americans, I know, do not want boots on the ground. I don't think this president does either. I just don't know how else we do it. All right, more on the Steve Hallstrom Show when we come back right after this. Hey, if you're thinking about a remodel, well, time to hop to it. Looks like summer's here. Pretty soon it'll be fall, and then we don't want to talk about what's after that. So it's time to get going right now. Delta Design and Construction has done so many of these projects for so many people in our community, and everybody loves them. Beauty and quality by design. Today's homes are all about personalized spaces and smart functional living. Think spa-inspired bathrooms, chef-worthy kitchens, flexible living areas. They specialize in custom craftsmanship, thoughtful details that elevate everyday life. Want to move beyond builder grade? Well, Delta can help you create a home that truly reflects your lifestyle. Delta Design and Construction, beauty and quality by design. Find them online at deltadesign.biz, deltadesign.biz. We are pleased to be joined in studio this morning by Glenn Urlacher, and Glenn is part of a group called Say No to the Casino at Moorhead. And you've probably been following this story. A lot of us have. It's been a big story in our community. The White Earth Band has proposed a massive casino and convention center project on some land near Dilworth. The project is still in the planning stages. Not all the approvals have been given. There's a lot of process steps that have to happen for this to actually take place. But there's a lot of momentum behind it. I think that's fair to say. And Glenn and some other residents in the area have said, we have some concerns about this, and we want people, we want our government officials to say no to this proposed project. Glenn, good morning. Thank you for coming in today.
Good morning, Steve and listeners. Thank you, Steve, for having us on and allowing us to share our concerns.
I have respect for people who will say, hang on a minute. When everything seems like it's going 100 miles an hour one direction, oh, this casino's going to come in, it's entertainment, it's a convention center, it's good for businesses, whatever. It takes some courage to stand up in the middle of that and say, I don't think this is a good idea. So we are here today to understand what your concerns are so that we can be more informed. It's good for us to be informed on pros and cons. We've heard the pros now many different times from the group that's behind this. And now we want to hear your standpoint on this as well so we can make an informed decision what we feel about it. So tell me why you have concerns and why you don't want this to happen. It sounds so great from all the marketing materials we're hearing. Why no?
Well, there's a vast list of reasons to be opposed to this casino. And we are formed primarily to make the community aware of what those concerns are. So from the get-go, when we have done the research, gambling addiction is a high-cost factor to the community and to families. Addictions for gambling are in the neighborhood of 4% of the people are already addicted to gambling. And another 18% are in a position to become addicted to gambling. When you talk to the mental health people, this is a huge issue for them. We don't even have addiction counselors in place at present time to handle the current addiction problems we have in the state, and that is in North Dakota and Minnesota. So if we have a casino that provides abundant gambling, those addiction numbers are going to go up. So that's one aspect of why we're opposed. Bankruptcies, family breakups are all part of what cause us to be very concerned. These are very real costs to our community, but they're very hard to identify because they're not only costs to family and community now, but they're generational costs. Family breakups cause costs for years and years down the road.
What do you say, Glenn, to someone who believes, yes, I understand. Yes, I'm sure there are people that struggle with gambling. Yes, I'm sure that there will be a crime incident or two or however many that come along with this. But those are small pieces proportionally compared to the opportunities that I get for entertainment and for a convention to come in. And a lot of people can go gamble and have a good time and have a nice supper and go home, and it's not a problem. They're going to say to you, Mr. Urlacher, respect your opinion, but you are speaking out for a very small percentage of things that could go wrong where most people are able to do these things and there are not a lot of problems.
And I respect that, but I also know that this community has an abundance of entertainment and restaurant opportunities. We got the Fargo Dome. We've got a convention center that's being proposed.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? All of a sudden, we have two convention centers coming.
We have a convention center in Dilworth that's being being built or is in process. So there is really no understanding from my perspective as to why we would need another facility like that. That doesn't only bring in entertainment and stuff, which I know it does, but it also brings in a boatload of problems. So, and our Moorhead City has focused its on downtown Moorhead. So, and they're revitalizing it. They're putting massive dollars into that with the new library and so on. It doesn't make sense because this land would have to be annexed. And then Moorhead would have to provide city services to that area. But that's not where Moorhead's focus is at this current time.
So you feel this is going to be a distraction from what the city has already set out to do?
Absolutely.
Okay. The sheriff of the county, Mark Emting, told our newsroom that this is kind of all news to me about what they're expecting as far as an increased budget for this. Obviously, you're going to need more law enforcement there, Clay County Sheriff's, Moorhead Police. We'll certainly need to serve that area there. And he said that he wasn't consulted on the study, and he's not exactly sure where the numbers came from. What was your reaction when you heard the sheriff's comments?
Very concerning, because the numbers that are put together, I don't know where they came from. I'm sure there's some legitimate numbers that they put together, but not factoring in or getting information from the local law enforcement, first responders, fire department, that's a huge, huge cost to our community that needs to be factored in when we consistently talk about the economic impact in a positive way. We must take in the consideration of what those costs are against that number.
You have done some work, and Glenn, you should know at home, friends who are listening on the radio, that Glenn has given me a I don't know what you would call this. It looks like a bookmark, but it's about 50 times the size of your normal bookmark with some of the concerns that he has. You've done your homework on this, Glenn, and you have made some points here about the economic costs. We all hear, and probably most of us think, oh, this will bring new money to our community and this will be an economic boost to the community. You're not so sure about that.
Absolutely not, because that money that's generated, for the most part, will not come back to the community because the tribe will gain the revenue. The tribe does not pay property tax if this land is put into the trust. So the local government will not receive property taxes off of that, and the taxes that they pay on revenues are not clearly defined. So for government to say that we're going to receive a lot of money is not real accurate. Yes, there will be jobs created. There'll be people brought into our community from other locations or from other communities to gamble. But they'll also spend that money there where they won't spend it at the local restaurant down the street or for their own family needs and that they have. So that dispendable income that they have now, if they use it on gambling, will not be used in our community. It's a transfer of revenue. It's not an increase in revenue.
Your statistics that you gave to me say that each slot machine removes $50,000 a year from the local economy because gamblers spend 10% less on food, 25% less on clothing, and 37% of gamblers raid their bank accounts. Tell me a little bit more about that. What was your source for this, and how did you arrive at those numbers or find those numbers that gamblers spend less money on food than other people might? So tell me about those numbers.
These particular brochure was put together by another individual from our group, so I'm not absolutely certain where the resources came from. But there are so many places that have casinos, and there's a group of people that have a weekly podcast that you can go on that have consistently researched this stuff and have verifiable numbers.
Do we know anything about what kind of crime really results? I think those of us, I grew up in a home where gambling was a bad thing. It was a strict Baptist home. And there was no dancing, there was no drinking, there was no gambling. And so I've kind of had this built into my back of my brain from a young age that when you gamble, crime comes around that. But I don't know if that is backed up by statistics. Do we know that when you have a casino, you can have, I get it, you know, someone drinks too much or whatever, but do we find like there's organized crime? How bad is the crime that comes up around a casino?
Again, those are numbers and research that's been done by groups that have worked with the casinos in other parts of the country. To be very specific as to what kind of crime happens, I'm not at liberty to talk about that. There's just a lot of thought process that says drug trafficking, you put together a lot of people in one area, and drug trafficking,
you're going to have some stuff.
Even the location of this.
Glenn, hold that thought. We have a break we need to take here, but we're going to come back and talk about the conversations they have had with members of local government. That's next on the Steve Holsham Show. Continuing our conversation with the group Say No to the Casino at Moorhead. You may remember the White Earth Nation bought almost 300 acres of ag land a little less than a year ago, and they announced plans to develop that into a casino complex, a property just west of the Highway 336 corridor. And Glenn Urlacher, one of the members of Say No to the Casino at Moorhead, is with us here today. By the way, we were talking about some of the statistics. If you go to the website that these folks have put together, Say No to the Casino at Moorhead.org, Say No to the Casino at Moorhead.org, you can find all those statistics and the source of them from where those statistics came from. So you can get all that information there. Glenn, I wanted to ask you about how the conversations have gone with city and county officials so far. What's been your reaction? You feel like they're blowing you off, or do you think you are being heard?
Well, I think it's difficult for them because there's a group that's been made up of two individuals from Dilworth City Commission, Glendon City Commission, Township, and Clay County that are working with the tribe. But it's my understanding that they've had very few meetings because the tribe is in a process. And I think that's one of the major problematic situations with this whole thing, is that nobody can identify where that process is at, or nobody tells us where that process is at. So I've had a couple conversations. They're concerned. They talk about the issues that they think are going to be surrounding it, but everybody says they don't know what stage this is at.
Mm. So you have also identified some safe water drinking concerns that you think could be a part of this conversation. Tell us about that.
This land is located right near the Buffalo River Aquifer. It is our source of water, and there has been concerns about people building in that area in the past. Matter of fact, two different individuals have been rejected when they proposed to build something in that area. So if we allow the tribe to build this huge casino, which has not been identified as to what it will all involve, could be a gas station, will certainly be a casino and a motel, hotel, restaurant. There's other things that they've talked about. So there's a lot of ambiguity as to what will be built there. And then we are allowing them to do it when we told other people no. So that becomes a very unfair situation.
You also believe that there are concerns. We've talked about crime here a little bit, and Clay County and Moorhead Police. But you also say that human trafficking is something that often occurs when you have got places like this. Tell us about what you've found and what you've learned about that.
Well, anytime you have an area the size of our community, you're going to have those issues just because of the amount of people. But we also have two major highway running through this community, which also leads itself to that type of situation. So we do not want stuff that is going to enable that to happen more easily.
What do you say to the resident who says, okay, look, I share your concern. I think some of these things might happen, but if we get this, it's going to generate the kind of revenue that might help keep my taxes down because they might be paying for that rather than me. What do you say to that?
That's just not the way that works because, like I said earlier, they don't pay property taxes. And to identify exactly what they pay tax on their revenue is not clear. So they will provide jobs, but those jobs will come at a high expense. The other thing I would like to relate to is the effect it will have on local charitable organizations. There's gambling, local gambling now. If that happens, the charities that receive revenue from American Legion and so on will see a substantial decrease. Mm. These charities are out doing good work for our community. And now we're going to take that away from them because that revenue stream is going to go to the casino, which the revenue goes to the tribe.
Most of the time when someone goes up against an issue like you are doing, there's one reason it comes down to that I'm most scared or worried about this. Is there, for you, is there one particular smoking gun here that you're the most worried about?
I think it's the long-term effect on our community, the effect on our families that we just know that there's going to be families that are hurt. We have colleges in this area that have young kids that could easily be addicted to gambling. I mean, they're sometimes college students are in a tough situation financially.
Yes.
Well, let's go to the casino and make some quick, easy money. Well, sorry to say, the casinos aren't made to make you money. They're made to make them money. So
it'll be a long process for this to go through, so it'll be a long, dragged-out scenario on that. So we appreciate you coming in and giving us some perspective on this. Glenn, thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you. And I'd just like to reiterate, we need people to step up and talk to the cities of Dilworth, Glendon, the Clay County Commissioners.
Got to leave it there, my friend. Thank you for being here. Take care.
Thank you.
Back with Hour 2 after this. Vision Ford and Lincoln in Wahpeton is hiring in their sales team. That could mean the job of a lifetime for you. If you like sales, you like service, they've got jobs just for you. Make really good money, no matter what avenue your passion lies in. And if you are looking for a job with great benefits, Vision Ford Lincoln, the place to go. Not just the place to buy a great set of wheels, it's the place to put your career in overdrive. Go to drivewithvision.com to find out more. That's drivewithvision.com. Second hour of the program, lots to cover here. We got the key three coming up here in just a couple minutes. I think there are three stories that kind of rise above everything else in the news cycle today. Stories that really matter, so we'll get to those here in just a few minutes. Best thing I heard all day coming your way, and I don't know what Ilhan Omar really knew about all the fraud going on in her neighborhood, but boy, there had to have been signs, right? That's one of the kind of humorous social media lines going on now. People will put a post up. If I win the lottery, I might not say anything about it, but there will be signs, and there'll be a picture of them made up by some AI tool of, you know, them flying their own airplane or something like that, you know. So if we go along those lines, I don't know what Ilhan Omar knew about all the fraud going on, but there had to have been signs. I'm guessing there's some memes out there with Ilhan and three or four other people from her community zipping around in a new Lamborghini or something like that. Well, Nick Shirley is completely convinced. So I heard that. I thought that was definitely something I had to play for you. Julie Ellingson will be here at 10:30. She is the Executive Vice President of the North Dakota Stockmen's Association. saw a report last week saying that the nation's cattle herd is declining in numbers, but in North Dakota, we're actually going the other way. So we're going to talk to her about that. And then before we finish up, I'll have to sneak this in. I had a chance to see a couple of very interesting notes about NDSU's football upcoming schedule. And I said, I've got to sneak this in for my people here. So we'll do that. Got to have a little fun with the sports department every once in a while. So lots to do here on the show in hour number two, but would love to hear from you at 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. You can text me at that number as well, 701-271-1100. You can email studio@flagfamily.com, studio@flagfamily.com. Let's sneak in a couple of texts here before we get to key three. Steve, I'm fully persuaded that you older hawks who want all the uranium should go in and get it. 55 and older fighting force. Woot, woot. Well, I'm not sure that I'm the guy to do it. But, okay, let me ask you this. What's the alternative? Literally, what's the alternative? The president declares war. We've got 13 people dead. We've invested billions in doing this. And the president said, we had to give up a summer of low gas prices and economic growth in our country. I would not say give up on that, but it definitely takes a hit when you've got fuel prices what they are. The U.S. government has to pay for fuel, too. So we've given up what promised to be a really good summer in the economy leading into midterms. This threat in Iran was so severe that we had to give those things up. And so what do we do now? If you say, well, let's not go get the uranium, let's just leave whatever, and I don't know if you would also say, let's just get out, let's just be done with this thing, or whatever, but you can call me a hawk, you can call me a lunatic, it doesn't matter. But I'm just saying what the president has already told us necessitates the finishing of this action in Iran. It really does. There's no other way you can explain if he doesn't go all the way, because he has said, we need to finish this job. Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. What good does it do if we get the enriched uranium and they've got stockpiles of the raw material and they just go back to firing up their factory? That doesn't do it. Then the whole thing will have been for naught. All of it. The financial losses, the human losses, the distraction, the frustrations, the high prices here at home. He can't just say we're done. And I'm not saying that that's what he should do. I'm saying we've come this far. We're probably at the other team's 20-yard line. Let's go ahead and get in the end zone from here. So, I don't say this because I think it'd be great to have troops on the ground over in Iran going into underground bunkers and tunnels where they're going to be rigged and booby-trapped. Of course not. But I just don't know what other choice we have, really. If we're going to do what we said we were going to do and make sure that Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons, at least for the foreseeable future. I mean, we'll be back dealing with this at some point, I have to assume, unless we can overthrow the regime, which I don't know that anybody seems to have a plan to do that. Maybe the president does, and he just hasn't articulated that. But at the minimum, we need to do what we can to set him back 10, 15, 20 years. I don't even know if that's possible. But this is, when you get into a war like this and you say this is what we're going to do, then that is the only resolution or the only outcome that makes any sense at all. So again, this is not a Democrat or a Republican issue. I'm just saying this is what's common sense. That's what I try to do on this program. I try to apply things against the conservative playbook, the good book, and then the book of common sense. Just what other alternative is there? And if you have one, tell me, because I hope there is one, because I don't like anything about what I just said. But the president has got our country in a position where we don't have really other choice at this point. So appreciate the text. I don't know what else you want me to say. Steve, about the casino, for hiring, the tribe will always hire their own people first. Okay. If the casino comes in another tax, they will be tax exempt. The township loses big on taxes. The riffraff and trouble it will bring put locals in the crosshairs of dealing with it. All resources will be strained with no compensation. Okay? A lot of good points being made there. And then, oh, a picture. Guys, listening to you this morning from Switzerland. Thanks for what you do. Oh, and they sent a beautiful picture of just a beautiful Tuesday morning in Switzerland. Thank you for that. Okay, let's get to the key three here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Story number one, you heard a little bit about this at the top of the hour. A panel of federal judges earlier today has blocked the state of Alabama from redistricting. The court said that it will dilute the votes of black people. It says that this map is intentionally discriminatory based on race, and it is now going to go to the Supreme Court to determine whether these maps can be used by Alabama this year. It's a three-judge panel, and they say they previously ruled that Alabama's map of districts violated the voting rights of 1965 and intentionally discriminated against black voters based on race. So that's what they're saying there. I imagine every state where this has happened, where it looks good for the Republicans, has had some judge somewhere saying, yep, it's all race-based, so Supreme Court looks like we'll get a hold of that one. To this point, these things have worked out very well for Republicans along the way here. And honestly, I don't know enough about this, you guys, to say that this is purely pure motives and, you know, this is really just setting the score right. I kind of believe that in my heart. I just haven't seen enough to know. I'm not an expert enough to know on this. But it certainly seems from what I can gather that Democrat states have been doing this all along, and now it's turning into an issue, of course, because Republicans are doing it pretty late in an election cycle, if we're honest about it. So that's story number one. Story number two, shares of Ferrari fell sharply today after the company unveiled its new fully electric car, its first model. The Luce model comes as other luxury car manufacturers have scaled back on plans to introduce their own EVs due to weak demand. And they just don't believe that a lot of people are going to buy this. Shares of Ferrari, 8% lower this morning. And finally, credit to a guest. We had him on the program a couple months ago, Sung Kim. He's a first lieutenant in the U.S. Army. He also owns the Chick-fil-A at West Acres. And yesterday during the lunch rush, and you know what the lunch rush looks like at Chick-fil-A, right? There's a lot of cars there with a lot of hungry people. But Sung said, you know what we're going to do on Memorial Day? We're going to take a 10-minute break. We're going to have a ceremony here to honor the fallen. They raised the flag. They also sang the national anthem at 11:50 a.m., a moment of silence. He said, it's a privilege that we get this freedom to serve this nation. I wanted to as a business owner, but also as an officer in the U.S. Army to honor people who have served and paid that price. And we worked with our leadership team to put an event together in observing the meaning of the holiday. Wonderful. Makes me want to go buy more Chick-fil-A sandwiches is what it does. Best thing I heard all day coming up next. Summer is here. Wow. That came out of nowhere, right? What was it, 59 Friday? Cloudy, windy, 59. And so many of us were saying, what the heck? Come on now. Let's go. And all of a sudden, I think it was 62 or something like that, or mid-60s on Saturday, then 85 Sunday, 93 yesterday, or 92 yesterday. Dean says 93 today. And just looking outside, it just looks like summer. The trees have filled out. It's green everywhere you look. We've had a little bit of rain. It's just gorgeous outside. And beautiful blue sky as well. Before we get to best thing I heard all day, let's hit the phone lines. We've got a couple of our friends who have weighed in or wanting to weigh in on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Good morning, Londa. How are you today?
Yes, good morning. I really love hearing about the Iran issue. I think there's quite a bit going on that Trump's doing. Like the Arab countries want the Iran thing gone, and Cuba, with that going on, is not getting oil, so their dictatorship is going to be getting gone. And I think NATO proved themselves, so it's getting gone. I think I also heard that many of those Mideast countries are not in OPEC anymore. So I and China obviously was getting kind of under the table things from Iran.
Yes.
I just pick up on a lot of stuff that, you know, who knows what's going on with all of these countries.
Londa, this is a really great call. You, my friend, are one of the most informed people that we have ever had call this show. You gave me about five storylines there that I honestly hadn't heard a whole lot about. But you're talking about the ramifications for Cuba and OPEC and things like that. A couple of them I've heard kind of what you have too, but then a couple of those items that you brought up I had not heard before. It is certainly possible. And look, President Trump is a smart man. He's not naive. He understands who these people are. And so is there a scenario here under which the president feels that for a certain amount of time, this can be quote unquote dragged out to put pressure on other agencies around the world and other governments around the world? That's absolutely true and absolutely possible. So that's a very good perspective and worth us all keeping in mind. Londa, thanks for calling the show today.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care. All right. Londa with a call of the day. Very nice. Crystal's up next. She wants to talk about redistricting. Good morning, Crystal.
Yeah. Hey, and yes, I would like to, but real quick with her call, the Abraham Accords. That's also in the mix.
Right.
Over in
Trump
Iran.
Is trying to get them to. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, because of the ones who are in the Abraham Accords, they are the ones that have asked Trump to please go back to negotiating because we don't want to get hit more, kind of a thing. But going back to the Alabama thing, I've been involved in lots of the elections and been a person on election day helping with elections.
Yes.
And things. And one of the biggest criteria is consistency, things that make sense to voters. And a lot of people get confused when you change the rules in the middle of the game, so to speak. And so something that with the districts, you know, with majority black representation, for example, in Tennessee, there's a Democrat, and he's a white guy in a majority black district. And he's complaining that it's being changed around so that a black Republican woman, and that would make sense. I mean, if you're going to go by skin color, then it shouldn't make any difference if you're a Democrat or Republican.
Right.
But for him to be saying that this is a majority black district, and here he is, he's a white Jewish guy who's been there for almost 20 years, that's a little inconsistent as well. And so when we're looking at whether it's Louisiana or Alabama, they really need to have some of this stuff settled before the election gets started.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's votes that have already been cast, for example, in Louisiana, and then the governor steps in and says, okay, we're going to back off here again, because, I mean, that's, again, coming back to consistency, things that make sense. And voters want to vote, but when they're confused and don't understand, they're more likely just going to stay home.
That's right. Yeah, that's a very good point. Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Crystal, for giving a call. We say that in our sales meetings all the time, that a confused mind will always say no. So if you're going to be marketing a product, bringing your service or your product to somebody and saying, hey, would you like to buy this? You better make it easy for people to understand what it is they're buying, how it's going to help them, and what the value proposition is. Otherwise, you don't have a chance because people are going to say, I don't know. And Crystal's right, I think, on this deal. If voters aren't sure what they're voting for or why, they may be more tempted to stay home. Now, you'd hope that most people are good Americans and decide to come out and vote anyway, but there is no guarantee on that. So I think Crystal brings up a very good point. All right, so I want to talk for a minute about, in the best thing I heard all day, about my biggest frustration in Minnesota. And my biggest frustration is I feel deep down in my bones that there has to be some knowledge from Ilhan Omar, Keith Ellison, and Tim Walz, kind of the trifecta, about all the stuff that was happening with the fraud. There's just so much out there to make me believe that there's no way that these people could not have known what was happening. And we found out not too long ago that some of the checks and balances on the web portals where people filed for these grants, that grant money, that the checks on where they were sending the money to was disabled. That whole system of governing that was disabled. So people were able to, you know, put in their application from wherever. And so you got things like that that make me say, how could the governor not know any of that? With Keith Ellison, he's on record telling people in the Somali community, hey, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but we'll look the other. It'll be okay. We'll figure out how to get past this. There are recordings of that. Ilhan Omar lives in a district where many in the Somali community were benefiting from some of these fraud rings. How did she not see any of this? It just doesn't seem plausible to me that they don't know. Yet there's been, you know, people charged in these things, but it's not any of those three. And until that changes, I don't know what's going to change. Nick Shirley, who kind of blew the lid off the whole thing, was saying just as much in an interview he did not long ago.
It's literally not even a 10-mile radius where most of this fraud took place. It's within like a 2-mile radius. And this is all around where her congressional district. And so for her to say that she didn't know about this fraud is such a lie. And she's obviously trying to cover her face. I mean, look at her net worth. It just went down by $29 million.
Yeah. And we know that she had a relationship with many of the individuals involved in this, had campaign rallies at various restaurants connected to this and so forth.
Yes, Will Cain, the Will Cain Show. Yeah, I mean, look, is it possible that they didn't know about any of this? Man, I don't know. I guess, but it just doesn't seem realistic. Or, you know, there's a duty to ask questions, too. If you see things that look weird, certainly they saw things that looked weird. At least Omar did. And not asking, you know, what's happening here? How is this going on? There's a duty there when you are a congresswoman in the United States. Thought that was well said. Coming up next, Julie Ellingson. From the text line, Steve, you said the government has to pay for fuel, too. When's the last time the government paid for fuel? That's taxpayer money. We pay for it. Well, yes, you are right. You are right. I think this administration probably cares more about financial responsibility of what they spend the money on that you and I have given them more than maybe the past one. But you are right. It's good for us always to be reminded that the government does not have any money. It only has the money that we have given it. So thank you for keeping me honest there. We are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Julie Ellingson. And Julie is the executive director of the North Dakota Cattlemen's Association, North Dakota Stockmen's Association. And whenever there's a topic going on in the cattle industry, it matters a lot. I grew up on a hogging cattle farm in central Minnesota. Many of my friends out western North Dakota are into ranching, and it's a big part of our state's economy. So we appreciate Julie whenever she can give us a few minutes. Good morning, Julie. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great. And how are you?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Appreciate you giving us a few minutes here today. So I saw a story not too long ago that said that nationally cattle numbers, we're at about 86 million head of cattle, the Ag Department, USDA, DA said that. And the beef herd is down 1% from a year ago. The calf crop is down 2%. And the cattle on feed are down 3%, yet North Dakota's numbers are on the rise. And so I thought, well, we have to talk to Julie about this and find out why. So why are we bucking the trend? Why are we able to do that here in North Dakota?
Yeah, well, certainly we've got some outstanding beef cattle that we raise here in North Dakota and some outstanding beef producers, and I'm sure that that's part of it. Mother Nature really deserves a lot of the credit, though. We have been significantly ahead of the game in terms of many others in the beef belt in terms of precipitation and grass and forage availability, not just over here the last year, but really over the last decade. And so that really has fueled a lot of the inventory changes we've seen nationally. And fortunately, North Dakota has been in a better position that way to keep that cow herd whole. And also to help see some strength and some growth in some numbers over the last couple of years where we have not seen that, as you indicated, nationally and in many of our even neighboring states.
We are coming back from a nasty drought situation, 4 or 5 years ago, I suppose, when a lot of ranchers and producers said, I don't have any land that's worth anything right now. There's no grazing you know, material available, and I don't have enough stock saved up from, you know, past year's hay crop, and I don't have enough grain to feed them. I better let them go. So what has been the key to the rebuild in North Dakota's herd since that happened, Julie?
Yeah, and so I think that the years that you're talking about, we had a very significant statewide drought in 2021. And again, right ahead of that in 2017, of course, we see pockets of drought or drier conditions every year. We saw an improvement in terms of our precipitation and our grass, and we're able to hold that herd together and then also see some small increases. The inventory that came out from the National Ag Statistics data, as you had mentioned, showed the U.S. cow herd down 1%. But at the same time, North Dakota had grown, in fact, had the largest percentage growth year over year of all of the United States. And so that's been an important part of the story. What's interesting now, as we look at the U.S. Drought Monitor, of course, those reports come out every Thursday, and sadly, about 72% of the U.S. beef herd right now resides in areas with either severe to exceptional drought. Mm. North Dakota, up till about the beginning of this month, actually showed no drought. We had zero color on that drought monitor map, which was encouraging. However, as we know, we've seen some of that color start to fill in for our own state. And so even though we're better off than much of the country, we certainly have seen some deteriorating conditions here. We've had an up and down kind of weather pattern, a colder spring than normal, and now some extreme heat coupled with some crazy wind. And again, could change the drought picture for us here in North Dakota. Up to this point, we've been able to push back on that, and we're hopeful that the little bit of rain that much of North Dakota saw here over the holiday weekend comes with some additional here in this really key forage growing period between now and the end of June.
I get out to western North Dakota on a fairly regular basis, and it looks fairly green out there right now. That's a good sign.
Yeah, it really is, and I think that, again, the moisture that came here over the last handful of days in much of the state certainly was a welcome sight. I know that it chased some producers out of their fields that were planting,
right?
Maybe messed up some brandings and maybe some Memorial Day plans. But I tell you what, there was a lot of smiles on the face of cattle producers to see that coming, because this is such a critical time in that forage growing period. And again, very, very dry conditions in much of the state, even though we're still the bright spot in the U.S. for the most part. And so very important that we continue to get that moisture and spur that grass along when it makes a difference.
Yeah, I know a lot of the region got half to three quarters of an inch there maybe about a week ago now. But as dry as it was and as warm as it has been and going to be for a while, it won't take long before we need more moisture, that's for sure. So before I get to my next question, Arlene has given us a call, and she's standing by, and she has a comment for Julie. Arlene, good morning. Welcome to the show. What's your comment for Julie?
Good morning, Steve. This is your lady cattle rancher from Versa.
Oh, so wonderful, Arlene. Thank you for calling.
I don't know if you know that. You're talking to a bit of a celebrity in our beautiful Black Angus world and the Ellingson Bulls. And many of us down here in West Central Minnesota are running Ellingson Bull sired calves and cattle, and they do a fantastic job. We are blessed to have them. Thank you, Julie. I got to visit your wonderful ranch a few years ago and was chauffeured around by the Stetson Ellingson, and people accuse me of tiring them out when they come to our farm with the knowledge of my cattle. He tired me out.
Mm. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed your visit, and it's always a pleasure to showcase the herd and to promote the cattle industry across the U.S.
I even got my picture taken with one of the producers of Ellingson Angus. Mr. Rangeland happened to be home, and I got my picture with him.
Well, it's right. A fan fest here. It's a Ellingson fan fest here today. So
it is an Ellingson. Oh, the Stetson, the Ellingsons have what a lot of people don't understand. When you are trying to sell to people around here. We're not all as blessed to have a lot of land and as many beautiful cattle as the Ellingsons do, but they don't talk down to you. They don't minimize you. Their first question is, well, how many cattle do you run? Okay, well, I'll be getting back to you in a couple hundred years. Yeah, I'm sorry, right. I'm going to move on to a bigger producer. Their family is fantastic and great marketers.
Oh, well, thank you, Arlene, for giving a call. And, Julie, you need to know that Arlene sends me a picture to the text line maybe once a week or so of one of the mamas or one of the calves, and I love it. So we appreciate you, Arlene.
Thank you to you both.
Thanks so much for giving us a call.
And thanks, Julie, for what your family does for our Angus breed. We need all the help we can get.
Thanks much,
well,
Arlene.
God bless you. Thank you for that, those kind words.
Take care. Yes. Yeah, so, all right. So I want to ask, you have talked, Julie, about how we've been able to move our herds forward here in North Dakota. How are ranchers getting better and smarter at what they do than maybe where we were 10, 15, 20 years ago? There's technology and advancements in everything. How are ranchers and producers doing it better than they were a few years back?
Yeah, so it's a really an amazing story. I'm just really proud of our broad U.S. beef industry in terms of efficiencies. We talk about, you know, these 75-year low inventory numbers, but at the same time that we have smaller livestock numbers, we have near record beef production. And that speaks to some of those technologies and those efficiencies like that you had referenced, whether that be in genetics, again, pharmaceuticals, herd health advancements, as well as a variety of tools that help us get the maximum efficiency out of our grasses and some of the cropping components and things of that nature to do more with less. I think it's pretty fascinating to think about the U.S. beef herd. We have about 18% of the world's beef cattle. Excuse me, we produce about 18% of the world's beef with just a little over 5% of the beef cattle. And so that really takes a lot of effort from the producer level and all the way through the supply chain to make that happen and to be able to do more with less. In the U.S., it takes one animal equals about 2.66 animals globally to equal the same amount of beef. And again, doing more with less. Again, improved genetics and efficiencies, and also a smaller environmental footprint than ever before. And I think that's really something to celebrate, and it's something that we, you know, probably don't talk enough about within our industry.
So we all want more beef, and those of us who love having a good steak or a burger, we love going to the store and being able to find a good deal when the grocery store's got something on sale, but it's hard to find. How do we get more people to consume beef products when the prices are as high as they are right now?
You're right. We have seen an increase in beef prices, all food prices. It's interesting that now that we not only a supply and demand issue, but the demand element and the interest in beef is higher than ever before. We saw a 10% increase in the retail all fresh beef demand year over year. Some of those are key drivers, right? Beef is finally getting recognized, I think, for its high quality protein and other nutritional aspects. We even saw an inversion of the dietary guidelines and the food guide pyramid, where we used to be at the tip, now really serve as the top and as the base. The nice thing, even as prices rise and we see changes, I think what's pretty special about the beef industry is that there's all kinds of cuts and all kinds of opportunities to fit either your flavor preference or your different ideas, as well as different ways to choose more economical cuts to fit within your budget, whether it be a ground beef or you're more in a prime rib style. Lots of different choices on the meat counter to fit whatever the needs are for your individual family.
Well, we love having this good information available. Thank you. And as Arlene said, your family for being part of it, doing it right on the ground with everybody else here in the state. And thank you for sharing a little bit of your perspective on this with us today.
Yeah, Well, thanks for telling your story. And you know what? It is beef month. Always a great time to put a piece of beef on the grill.
You got it. Thanks so much. Julie Ellingson, Executive Vice President, North Dakota Stockmen's Association. Back after this on the Steve Halsham Show. We have the lunch specials from PetroServe USA for today. Valley City, get the hot beef sandwich. Boy, does that sound good. Taco Mac in Harwood. West Main Avenue, meatloaf or cheese ravioli Alfredo. 12th Avenue in Fargo, chicken and gravy. 205 NP Avenue, Salisbury steak. They've got the Mac and Beef today at the 45th Street store and the Wahpeton store. Sloppy Joe's in Glendon, Castleton chopped beef and Cheyenne beefy noodles. Beefy noodles, man, that just sounds great. PetroServe USA, helping America fuel better. All right, let's go to the phone lines. William wants to talk about Iran as we're getting in our final moments of the show here. William, you've got the floor, my friend. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I think from Iran's perspective, their biggest goal right now is to drag out the war until the midterms and hope that the Democrats win. That's their only chance of survival.
Yes, unfortunately, we'd still have the president to deal with. The president could be limited, I suppose, though you're right about that. By what happens in the midterm elections. I feel like I'm with you on 99% of what you said. I think probably their plot in my mind is they just want to drag this out because the longer this goes, I think they feel like the president's going to cave because he doesn't want gas prices this high at Labor Day, for instance. So I don't know if they are hoping for new people to work with as much as they are just hoping that he will back off and make a better deal for them because he just doesn't want these high gas prices to last. That's my suspicion, but I probably know 10% of the information on any issue with something like this because there's just a lot that we'll never know. But I'm with you, William. They're trying to smoke him out. I'm sure of it.
Well, anything to get rid of him because he's, I think that one of the best things he could do is arm the Iranian people with small guns. Mm-hmm. And I think they would take over the country. And
I've heard people say that. Yeah, I don't know. It's a really good question is how do you do it? How do you get the guns to the people? We had a congressional candidate, Alex Balazian, not too long ago, and he said they could find a way to do it. So apparently people that know military procedures say there's a way that you could do it. So it'll be interesting to find out. William, thank you for calling. I appreciate you giving a call today. You take care. Enjoy the beautiful day. Thanks, William. From the email box, Steve, I live in Alexandria, and I listen to your show often while driving. I appreciate and applaud your opposition to the proposed North Dakota Socialist Free Lunch for All program. I wonder if the supporters of that ill-conceived program are trying to copy the pathetic fraudulent programs of Minnesota. In January of 2024, Walzer bragged about his free school lunch program, which was then already 20% over budget and running out of money, according to the spring 2026 edition of Thinking Minnesota. Yeah, that's the magazine put out by Center for the American Experiment, by the way. Citizens of North Dakota, please don't copy anything Minnesota government does. You'll be sorry. That from Mac in Alexandria. Mac, thank you for the call. Yeah, I'm going to be on the warpath about this summer. I don't know how much we can turn around the tide on this one, because this is from the polling that's out there, this is a glacier moving down the channel, and it's going to be really, really hard to defeat it. It just sounds so good at face value, and if people haven't researched the issue, it's very easy to believe that a lot of kids are hungry in school and that they don't get meals when that's not true. And we know that already, and I've said this many times, but we want to throw $67 million at a problem that $3 million has already solved. But I don't know. There is big out-of-state money behind this, and there are a lot of North Dakotans, and I believe many of them well-meaning, who want this to go through. So I don't know if this can be beaten, but I'm going to try to do my part here on the show. I'm not so worried that it's is socialist, criminal, corruption. That's not my concern. I think it's just wasteful. It's putting a lot of money behind something that sounds good and might make someone feel good, but it's not needed. So I don't know that there's anything sinister going on here. But it does make you wonder. It absolutely does, because the people that are behind this, they know that you're not going to need whatever's put in there, and it's a constitutional measure, which means the state legislature cannot change anything about the spending. Whatever that program is called for is what they have to put in that budget, whether they need the money for something else or not. So, I mean, we're going to have tens of millions of dollars that are going to be piling up in this program every year. And you won't be able to tap into it like the legacy fund or anything like that. It'll just sit there for no good reason. And my hope is that we can get enough North Dakotans to say, hey, this isn't the right answer. If you think more kids should have the free lunch, then let's raise the ceiling or the floor and say for a family of four, instead of the way it is now, a family of four, $72,000 a year or less of income, they get all the breakfast and meals free anyway. If you think more kids need it, well, let's move that up to 100 or 125 or 150 or whatever it might be. But when we're doing this, just saying everybody, when you know that a lot of kids aren't going to use it to begin with, that's an issue. And then you have all this money piling up in an account somewhere. I'm not saying that there's going to be a lot of corruption and hands in the till, but tell me there's not going to be a temptation. Absolutely, people are going to want to get their hands on the money for whatever reason. Maybe it's good, bad, or otherwise. But we're going to fight it best we can and just get people to think. Think about it. Make an informed decision. If you still like it, then fine. But we're going to keep working on that this summer. Have a great day, my friend. Keep on flying that flag.